Universität Hamburg.
The medieval concept of the dragon is that of a dangerous monster with an appetite for humans. It can be found in European folk tales, medieval romances, Germanic and ancient Greek mythology, and first and foremost in biblical tales. This passage from Beowulf, an early medieval Anglo-Saxon heroic poem composed sometime between the 7th and the 10th century, illustrates vividly what the encounter of hero and dragon usually looked like. You have the quote on the handout. Hate was ignited. The horde guard recognized a human voice. The time was over for peace and parleying. Pouring forth in a hot battle fume, the breath of the monster burst from the rock. Roused to fury, each antagonist struck terror in the other. The 1960s, on the other hand, see the worldwide popularity of a very different kind of dragon. Puff, the magic dragon, lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Honali. Little Jackie Paper loved that rascal Puff and brought him strings and sealing wax and other fancy stuff. I am sure you all are familiar with the song. Puff the Magic Dragon was released by the American folk group Peter, Paul and Mary in 1962. The song is about the dragon Puff, who has adventures with his young human friend Jackie Paper in the magical land Honali, until Jackie grows up and is not interested in childhood games anymore. Although Puff is described as a typical European dragon with wings, scales instead of skin, and the ability to belch fire, at least the name Puff suggests that he's able to belch fire, Puff the Magic Dragon is not Jackie Paper's enemy, but his friend and helper. Today, in children's and fantastic literature, only a few dragons still conform to the biblical and medieval role model. By far more often, the dragon is depicted as the protagonist's friend or companion. Some, like Puff, even made it into the position of the protagonist in their own tales. When, and more importantly, why, did that change take place? The concept of the dragon has always been a shifting one. Everyone knows what a dragon is, but what exactly is a dragon? The Greek term drakon, with its Latin variant draco, and the English-derived dragon, originally meant snake. By the time of the High Middle Ages, the ancient Greek concept of the giant snake, the biblical motif of the snake as manifestation of the devil, and the Germanic giant-winged worm that guards a treasure and belches fire, had merged into the concept of the dragon we are familiar with nowadays, a winged giant snake with fiery and venomous breath associated with evil. Which then were the factors that shattered the medieval concept of the dragon as an evil creature? I would like to suggest that one of the forces active in this process was the gradual loss of influence of the Christian churches, and notably of Catholicism. Another one was the decolonization process, starting in the arts already before World War I and gaining momentum since the Second World War, with the civil rights and anti-racism movements and generally an increased awareness of prejudices. Thirdly, the general establishment of modern democratic societies in Europe led to a change in the perception of the other, including dragons. The idea of non-violent conflict resolution as a leading social and diplomatic obligation, especially after the devastating impact of the world wars, makes the slaying of a dragon ethically unacceptable. The 20th century identifies humans and not monsters as the most dangerous and most destructive species on Earth. But why is it then that the dragon underwent such a complete reinterpretation and not the Sphinx or zombies or giant spiders? The dragon's usefulness in religious symbolism was the reason for its frequent appearance in medieval texts as an opponent of the Miles Christi, the Christian Knight of the Crusades. Accordingly, criticism on the politics and teachings of the Catholic Church in the 20th century contributed to the reinterpretation of the dragon as an actually harmless, or at least misunderstood, creature on the verge of extinction. The starting point of the movement to rehabilitate the dragon from its unflattering role as antagonist can be found in the mock heroic works of the late 19th century, but came to its full effect after the Second World War and is still going on today, that is in modern, postmodern 21st century fantastic literature. The fact that the mock heroic dragon is an English invention should also not come as a surprise, given the prominence of the St. George legend about St. George the Dragon Slayer, who is the patron saint of England. So the St. George legend was extremely popular in England and definitely more popular in England than, for example, in Germany. According to the St. George legend, a dragon beleaguers the city of Selina. To appease the dragon, the citizens sacrifice a sheep and a young man or woman every day. When the lot falls on the king's daughter, St. George intervenes, defeats the dragon, and kills it after the citizens convert to Christianity. This is the version of the legend written down in the Legenda Aurea by Jacobus de Voragine of the 13th century. Since the Legenda Aurea was compulsory in the Dominican education system as the chief source about the lives of the saints, priests and scholars educated in Dominican institutions distributed this version of the St. George legend from northern Italy, where Jacobus de Voragine wrote his compendium, all over Europe. The dragon depicted in the legend combines ancient Greek, biblical and Germanic concepts and represents the European medieval concept of the dragon as we know it today. The most prominent dragon in the Bible is the one described in the book of Revelation. Before the second coming of Christ, Archangel Michael and his angels fight against an enormous red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns on his head. The quote is again on the handout, of course. They force the dragon out of heaven and down on the earth, where the dragon pursues a mother and her newborn son. The woman survives despite a flood of water the dragon spews at her, and both mother and son are rescued by God. In a later episode, the text says, "And I saw an angel coming down out of heaven, having the key to the abyss and holding in his hand a great chain. He seized the dragon, that ancient serpent, who is the devil, or Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. According to these passages in the Bible, the dragon was identified as a possible manifestation of the devil and became a symbol for evil, sin, and pagan religion in medieval theological and court literature. In the St. George legend, the dragon equally appears as a manifestation of the devil and of pagan religion fought by the Miles Christi, here in this context, St. George. The legend combines the Christian motif of the dragon as symbol for evil with an ancient Greek storyline about a hero who has to rescue an innocent victim. For example, in the tale of Perseus, Andromeda and Ketos, the sea monster, Andromeda is chained to a rock as an offering of appeasement to the sea god Poseidon. Perseus slays the monster, rescues Andromeda, and marries her. The St. George legend took over ancient Greek elements because it developed in Southeast Europe around a Roman soldier who died as a martyr in the early 4th century in the eastern part of the Roman Empire. In the High Middle Ages, returning crusaders brought the legend to Western Europe, and St. George, along with the dragon slayer of the Bible, St. Michael, became one of the most popular role models for the Christian knight. Germanic influence in the Legenda Aurea version of the legend can be found in the depiction of the dragon. A detail such as the dragon's venomous breath that kills the people in Selina, a parallel to the description of Fafnir, the dragon Sigurd encounters in the Volsunga saga, links the St. George legend to the Germanic concept of the dragon. The hero who slays a dragon to rescue a maiden comes from the Christian Greek tradition and does not appear at all in Germanic cultures. Beowulf and Sigurd, as the two most famous Germanic epic heroes, both slay their dragons foremost to win fame. In the version of the 13th century Icelandic Volsunga saga, Sigurd slays Fafnir to win the treasure Fafnir guards. For Beowulf, who has already proven his worthiness as warrior earlier in life in the fights against the monster Grendel and its mother, the slaying of the dragon is a matter of noblesse oblige. As the king of the gates, it is his duty to kill the dragon who ravages the countryside, even if it means his own death. In the Germanic texts, the slaying of a monster is an important act to gain lordship. In a political system where kingship is hereditary in general, but society chooses out of the noble families the warrior best fitted to defend the country in times of war, it is substantially important for young princes and noblemen to have the opportunity to prove their worthiness. And moreover, since a ruler ensures the loyalty of his retainers, that is the men who fight and risk their lives for him through generosity, if the slaying of a dragon includes winning a hoard of gold, the better for the young prince. By the time of the Middle Ages, the dragon had become a frequent character not only in saints' legends and Germanic heroic poetry, but also in chivalric romance, which evolved in France in the 12th and 13th century and became popular all over Europe. In Hartmann von Au's adaptation of Chrétien de Troyes' Iwein from around 1200, the knight Iwein, on his travels, encounters a dragon and a lion fighting in a forest clearing. He decides to help the lion and slays the dragon. And grateful, the lion offers to become Iwein's servant and helps him, for example, to hunt. Of course, in a European setting, to encounter a lion in a forest is as fantastic as the appearance of a dragon and puts both creatures in league with giants, sea serpents, demons, and other monsters the hero encounters on his quest to gain fame, a kingdom, and the hand of a wife. The medieval concept of the dragon is familiar to us mainly due to fairy tale tradition. The fairy tales featuring a dragon can usually be identified as retellings of medieval romances, such as, for example, Iwein, biblical tales, ancient Greek heroic narratives, or, especially in England, as retellings of the St. George legend. Okay, so much for the medieval concept of the dragon. The 20th century sees the establishment of democracy as the leading political system in Europe, accompanied by profound social and cultural changes. The leading question in regard to hero and dragon in literary fairy tales of the 19th century and in modern fantastic literature is, what constitutes heroism in a democratic society? Since a democratic society rejects the idea of hereditary leadership It also rejects the idea of hereditary heroic potential. Dragons in modern fantastic and children's literature are no longer evil just by being dragons, as much as a prince does not necessarily inherit any heroic potential. In Edith Nesbit's literary fairy tale, The Last of the Dragons, published posthumously in 1925, but most likely written around 1900, the princess, who is a better sword fighter than all the princes in the area, asks her father why it is necessary that a prince has to rescue her from a dragon. The king, who is rather traditional, insists, and according to ritual, she is tied to a rock near the cave of a dragon. The prince frees her and they approach the dragon together. As I said, the princess is actually a better sword fighter than the prince. It turns out that the dragon prefers petrol over human flesh any time and therefore never had the slightest intention of killing any princesses. They become friends, and the dragon serves as a flying omnibus in the couple's kingdom and takes children to the seaside and back. The idea that a human child protagonist has to save his friend the dragon from the knight, and not the other way around, is the main theme in Kenneth Graham's short story The Reluctant Dragon from 1898. Both texts belong to an Anglo-American tradition of mock heroic works, reversing the traditional antagonism of hero and dragon. An American example would be Ogden Nash's poem The Tale of Custard the Dragon from 1945 about a girl, Belinda, and her pet dragon. All these stories work with role reversals and alter the concept of the dragon in a playful and sometimes satirical way. Given that, as I have shown, the concept of the European dragon is a combination of different mythological concepts already, it should not come as a surprise that the modern reinterpretation of the dragon again incorporated extraneous material, this time of Asian origin. The Chinese dragon is a symbol for strength, wisdom, prosperity, and happiness. And once the concept of the European dragon as actually good creature was established, authors of fantastic and children's literature readily took over these characteristics. The author most notable for the Chinese influence in his works is Michael Ende. In Jim Button and Luke the Engine Driver of 1960, Jim and Luke rescue the princess Lisi and a group of other children from the cruel dragon Mrs. Grintooth. Instead of killing the dragon, they take it with them to Mandala, and in the original edition, the country was not called Mandala but China, where the dragon transforms into the golden dragon of wisdom and serves as an oracle to the two friends. The distinction between the friendly Chinese dragon and the dangerous European dragon is repeated in Michael Ende's later novel, The Neverending Story, published in 1979. Falco, who clearly resembles the Chinese concept of the dragon, coexists with Smerk, a dangerous European dragon who actually kidnaps a princess. Ende constructs his concept of the friendly dragon by replacing the European concept of the dragon with an Asian one, but he does not combine both concepts. A combination of Asian and European dragon can be found in the works of Cornelia Funke at the end of the 20th century, who follows Michael Ende's interpretation of dragons as bringers of luck and prosperity. In her novel Dragon Rider of 1997, the silver dragon Lung has the shape of a European dragon, but is harmless to other creatures since he lives on moonlight. The strongest hint at the reinterpretation of characteristics that originally stressed the European dragon's dangerousness but now point to his goodness, is Lung's fire, Lung Baich's blue fire that has healing powers. Okay, in my paper I have tried to show that in the last 100 years the concept of the dragon has seen profound change. In fantastic and children's literature, the dragon rose from a creature bound to the position of the hero's antagonist to a magical creature on equal terms with its human counterparts. The modern dragon can fill the position of antagonist, protagonist, or he can be the hero's companion. The new open concept of the dragon allows for a great deal of creativity, which explains the popularity of the dragon among the authors of fantastic literature and the large number of dragon tales published in recent years. Puff the Magic Dragon was by no means the first or only one of his kind, but he was the first who made it into the position of protagonist and so became a popular representative of the new dragon, rehabilitated from his medieval role as evil foe. Okay, thank you.